And also new Senator, Senator Lisa Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you're from north of the Twin Cities.
Yes, northwest, Princeton-Zimmerman area.
Okay. And committee members, that is the district, I believe, that Senator Wergen had before. And Senator Wergen was a member of the Education Committee. And we also have a little bit different structure, both in that we, and I guess maybe a word of explanation. First of all, a number of members last year felt that we could be more efficient and more effective by taking and putting the education policy and the education finance committee together. And that's not entirely a new process, because if any of you remember under Senator Pogemiller, I believe when Senator Pogemiller chaired the committee, he had both policy and finance as, under his jurisdiction. And so Senator Wieger and I just talked about this over the summer, over the interim, and we felt that this was a way to save some time and streamline the process. As you know, his committee schedule last year was met, was it Monday?
And Wednesday.
Monday and Wednesday at 3 in the afternoon, 3 to 5. And we still have that time slot, but many of the members felt that we could process both policy and finance in this committee or in one committee. And we will have kind of the same process of bill entry. And when you introduce a bill, if it's strictly an education bill, it'll go to the education committee and come here. And if it does not have any finance in the bill, that bill can be processed and then sent directly to the floor. So it will not go from this committee to the finance committee and go through the process of being heard in the finance committee and then being sent to the floor. So we will go both ways. If it's an education bill that has a finance implication, then it will be processed here and then have to go to the finance committee. And, of course, all of you know that the omnibus education bill not only has finance implications but tax implications and so on. So the trail for the omnibus bill generally is processed here, go to the finance committee, gets processed there, then goes to the tax committee and gets processed through the tax committee. And last year, with kind of a discussion back and forth between Senator Bach and Senator Cohen, Senator Cohen wanted to retrieve the education bill after it went through taxes back into finance because there were some changes made, but we avoided that. So that's kind of the mechanical process which we will do. The one thing that we haven't necessarily done in this committee, but Senator Wieger's policy committee did, is that we won't necessarily process every single issue in this committee. We may set up some, like a working group. If there's an issue that needs, you know, to have, a pulling together of some of the interested parties, and it's not quite, you know, ready to, members aren't quite in agreement of, you know, that we should send it on, then we'll probably do that rather than take a lot of time in the committee before it's before that takes place. And I think that'll be an efficient process. I hope, anyway. And we do have some other introductions. We have Kathy Olson is our page. Welcome back. And Tiffany Orth is our intern. And where is Tiffany?
She's upstairs.
Oh, she's upstairs. She is at the University of St. Thomas. I believe she's a senior there. And University of, you have Minnesota?
No, University of St. Thomas.
St. Thomas. That's what I thought she said yesterday. And members, if any of you were at the chamber banquet last night, you heard the leadership on both House and Senate and the governor talk about the session and about the deficit that we're facing. And so to kind of keep that before us, that is going to be a major part, I think, major responsibility of what we do. Even though we've been fortunate, I think, in the governor's unallotment process, the size of the deficit, the impacts in many ways will be affecting, I'm sure, education in some way, shape, or form. So I think that will obviously come in the next few weeks. Next week, what I'd like to do is to have our staff give a little bit of a presentation overview of the education finance process, and then also bring in kind of where we are in terms of the deficit as much information as they currently have. And then I would like to either next week sometime or the following week bring the some of the reports about where education is in Minnesota, some of the status reports. And I think it is good for us to not we'll spend a lot of time dwelling on the deficit, obviously, because that's a major component of this committee and our job here. But I think it is important to look at some of the positive aspects of our education system as well. And this past year, I think there's been several of those reports that have come back very positive. And that's a reflection not only on the job that you're doing here, but on the job that our education system in general is doing across the state of Minnesota. And so I'd like to do that, bring in whether it's the department or I'm sure the department, but some of the results of some of those reports. Anything I'm missing? There are a couple of working groups that are still out there that are somewhat of a continuation of Senator Wieger's policy committee, and one of them is on testing.
Yes, looking at the grad test and then the charter school work group.
Okay, those two groups, and we'll be having those presentations and results as they come in. So, okay. Well, today we have a topic that a lot of people are interested in. Governor had a press conference with a number of with Senator Bonhoeff and a number of others that participated. Looking at kind of as the backdrop, the deficit, how do we become more efficient in spending public tax dollars? How can we look at the system in a constructive but yet critical way? And one of the proposals that Senator Bonhoeff has put together is relating to shared services. There's a number of components to the proposal, and I welcome Senator Bonhoeff to walk us through that, and then we have a list of people who would like to testify. Any members, any Anything that you can think of before we get started, Senator Hamm?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. And I, before we get into the discussion of Senator Bonhoeffer's proposal, and I just wanted to follow up on the conversation that you had with those of us on the Republican side in the committee yesterday, and just to, I guess, for the record, encourage you in using your influence with the leadership of both the House and the Senate to help us to arrive at a sense of what the target is going to be for this committee. And we are all concerned about that. And we said yesterday, getting a lot of questions from our school districts about what to expect. And I think as early as we can to get a feel for what is that number, whether we're going to see a decrease or try to hold the line or if there's an increase that's projected. But I think I just want to, from our side, offer encouragement to you to help us to get to that target number as quickly as we can in the process. And I know we're still a ways away from that, not having the final revenue forecast, but just wanted to get that on the record and let you know you have our support in helping get that done. So,
good. Thank you, Senator Hand. Senator Bonhoeffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. What you have before you is a bill draft. This bill has not been introduced on the floor yet, and so what we'll be doing today is talking about the bill. We won't be moving anything. And as you can see, the bill encompasses more than just the shared services component. So before I talk about anything else, I just want to review what the approach is for the overall bill. We in the Senate have been keenly aware of what our state is facing and what our school districts are facing, and we are very concerned. And so in this time of limited resources, it was our thought that we would put forward our first bill as a bill that talks about reform and a bill that could say that we do understand what our school districts are facing. You know, we know that they're is a great need for financial resources with our schools, and we don't take that lightly. We wish more than anything we were having a different conversation this year about how we could use funding in additional ways for our schools, but that's not the situation we find ourselves in. And so this bill is strictly a bill with some key reform initiatives that we are proud to put forward. Within that, you'll see provisions that were in the policy bill last year. And just to refresh people's memories, that we had a policy bill that we in the Senate were very proud of. And at the end of the day, that policy bill didn't end up passing. And so we were able to take parts of that bill that people in this room worked very hard on, put them as part of our reform bill. As you'll see when you look at this bill, the first thing in it is actually the provision that Senator Saltzman and Senator Olson worked on all last year, along with many other people, that had to do with reading. And so you might say, well, why is that in the reform bill? And they'll speak more about that. But the reason that we do consider it a positive reform is one of the biggest challenges we face with regard to education funding is special education costs, and particularly the fact that the federal government hasn't paid their fair share of the special ed costs. And so we are doing all that we can to stop the growth in that area. And so they'll speak more about how this reading initiative impacts that. So as we go through this presentation, I will ask Senator Saltzman, Senator Olson to very briefly outline this, because this will not be the hearing where we will go into that in detail. Because we've heard that before, there still is some issues that need to be worked out, and we will give that section the time that it deserves to hear all of those issues. Following that, there's some technical changes, Mr. Nauman will cover, and then I will introduce the shared services portion of the bill. And I know yesterday people heard the governor, Representative Winkler, myself, Senator Clark, and others, Senator Olson was there, talking about that. And so it's generated a lot of interest. It's generated media interest. It's generated school district interest, and I will say not just interest but concern. And I assure you that this is a beginning of a conversation, and that the conversation today will be a first step in working in partnership with all of the stakeholders to make sure that what we do works for our school districts, our children, our state. And so in the spirit of that, we will hear the idea of shared services, and then if possible, we'll complete hearing the other two components of the bill more in summary form, and that would be the quality rating system, which deals with early childhood education that Senator Clark would outline, and the technology piece, which I would then come back to. So with that, before we move on to the shared services part, I would ask Senator Saltzman and Senator Olson, if you wanted to as well, if you would like to briefly review what the reading part is about.
Thank you very
much,
Senator
Saltzman.
And Senator Bob, thank you for bringing this bill forward, because I think that it's important to look at this as a package of ideas that we have had about education. And with our limited resources, I think it's very important to look at this. Most importantly, this provision is about children. And it's those children who have struggled to read. And what happens when children struggle to read and don't achieve proficiency by third grade, their outcome is very troubling to us. So looking at this, there's the fiscal reason for doing it, but the thing I think that drives Senator Olson and I is that we think about the kids. So in terms of reform, it is to address more effective and efficient reading instruction with our earliest learners, and also to make sure that all teachers come to the classroom prepared with these effective strategies. Not every child is going to need these strategies, but when you have a child who struggles to read, you want to make sure that they have every tool in their tool belt to be able to use the strategy that is most effective with them. Essentially, what the bill does is that it defines more defined definitions of the five strands of reading. And then it also goes into, and the piece that probably is really the key to this, is that it then, it does require a teacher test, a pre-service test, that a teacher completes before they are licensed. And there is a reading test now, but a teacher could, would not have to pass any of those reading questions, and they could still be licensed. So this is really ensuring that a teacher coming into the classroom is trained in these effective reading strategies. What we heard repeatedly as we went out with our policy committee last year, and this came up not because it was the topic of our hearings, but we heard repeatedly from school districts that they're retraining teachers soon after they hire them and sending them to workshops. We're also hearing that a lot of teachers are going outside our higher education institutes, sort of to charter reading schools to pick up these strategies. So in statute right now, it is part of, it is to be part of higher ed's curriculum. We just want to make sure that teachers coming out of our colleges have these skills, and being able to prove that through a competency test, we believe, is very important. The test itself does not create the competency. It's that it's included in the curriculum. And we can really talk more about this at another time. Senator Olson, you might have some things you want to add.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Chairman Stump. I do believe very strongly that this belongs in as a major reform measure, because as good as we are in Minnesota, we are consistently at about a 30% level of our students not achieving proficiency by third grade. And that is at that point is when they need to know how to read to be able to learn. And so we're concerned about what's happening in high school, of not being able to achieve. We're discovering now that part of the reason that kids are failing their math tests is that they are reading problems and not math problems. And if they could do the math, if they were able to read. So if we can deal with the reading issues early, I think long term, we're going to have more and more savings. There are some states, I don't know if it's plural, I know of at least one state, that determines and does their planning for their future need for prison beds by what's happening in reading at the end of third grade. That should tell us something. So it's hard for me to believe. In many circumstances, I bring up and talk about this whole reading issue. I have never had any pushback from anybody. In fact, one of the most recent stories that I had was really very telling. A very close friend of mine, and their son, who just turned 40 this year, was when he started at a very good school in the Minnetonka School District. Within weeks, the parents were contacted and said, Sam's not going to be able to read. He's not learning how to read. And when they had teacher conferences, that was continued to be reinforced. Well, interestingly enough, Christmas vacation came up, and at that time it was still politically okay to call it Christmas vacation. Sam's mom's, or Sam's grandmother, mom's mother, who was a country school teacher, came to spend the Christmas vacation with them. And she brought along her materials that she used, you know, after her year of normal training. And she worked with him, I'm sure not 24/7, but she worked with him during that two-week period on his phonics and phonemic awareness. And when he went back to school, he was reading. And he's just a prolific reader today. And that's what it takes. If a teacher doesn't have some of these skills, they're going to miss many of the students that we need to have learning. Maybe all students don't need the phonics and the phonemic awareness, but those are two elements of the five strands that we've had in law for over 8 years as part of the policy in teaching reading. And we're trying to communicate that we do mean it, and we're looking for the weak links that is causing it not to happen, because I think our state will soar. There are other states that have discovered this and are making great headway, and we don't want to fall behind. So we need to, this is a reform that we need. I think it can show rather a strong and immediate results. Some of the top leaders that have been in special education in Washington, D.C., I think some others may have heard a presentation as they're talking about the rapid growth in the learning disabled and the emotional behavioral categories of special ed, say that in the 90% range of the ones that are being put into those categories are instructional casualties. That if they're taught right and well, they don't need to be classified and bear that classification of special ed and need that extra cost, which we aren't getting reimbursed for, is a drag on our whole system, especially if it's not necessary. And only 5% that get into that label ever get out. So those are some of the things that I think we need to be looking at, both policy-wise, but with strong financial implications. And so I think it's very important that we take this step and go forward with it. And from my standpoint, it's a very pro-teacher. It's a very pro-teacher issue, because we know that teachers do want to be equipped to have their young people, their children learn. It helps them. It helps everyone. So thank you.
Thanks
for including this, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Olson and Senator Saltzman. And I know there are people here today who came specifically because they had interest in this area. And so I do assure anybody who does want to pursue this conversation further, there will be ample opportunity to do that in future sessions. So we just went through and addressed section 1 through 4 in the bill draft you have before you. The next section is in some ways a technical section. So rather than I go through it, I'm actually going to ask Mr. Nauman to tell us about section number 5.
Mr. Nauman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, you may regret that after you hear my voice.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
Section 5 is language that we have seen in this committee a couple of times. It was included in the policy bill last year. It's an update to the so-called set the price report language to make it more operational. We did some work at the staff level with the Department of Education about a year and a half ago. And this is their recommended fix to make it work the way that the original intent was.
Senator Baha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section number 6 begins the shared services portion of the draft And then sections 7 and 8 deal with other issues, and then we go back to shared services on section 9. So I am going to now do the section on shared services at a total, so we'll do that, and we'll come back to the other two sections. So before I talk about exactly what the bill does, I just wanted to give some history of why I'm carrying this and why I think it's important. And so for those of you who heard me speak at the press conference, I apologize that I'm repeating myself, but I do want to make sure that you understand sort of where I'm coming from in this. I spent 20 years in the business community before I ended up as a state senator. And one of the things I've noticed as I listen to each of us talk about the things we're passionate about is we bring our life experiences to how we legislate and how we view policy. And that's what makes it kind of interesting when we all get in a room and talk about the way we see policy. So I grew up, you know, as a retailer, because my family owned a chain of women's clothing stores, and so I find that no matter what I'm doing, I just sort of look at it from that perspective. And when I came to the legislature, I really came to work on education. That was the thing that got me here. But I started work on education, and I looked at all of our school districts, and I translated them to my retail kind of experience, and I thought, gosh, it's like there's 360 branch stores and the state is the big box retailer. And I know that's pretty simplistic, but that was just one way I looked at it, and I thought, this seems kind of unusual that every school district in some ways operates like it's an independent business unit. And that just didn't make sense to me as I looked at all the different, you know, parts of what the school district does, the purchasing, the human resources, the transportation, and not to diminish any of that, but it just seemed like an unusual model of how to do business. And so I started talking to my colleagues, I talked to the superintendents about different things, and I'll always remember a conversation I had with Dr. Peterson from Minnetonka, and by the way, he would not say that he necessarily gave way to this concept, but he was telling me that he thought it was crazy that school districts had the responsibility of transportation, because he was saying, you know, I mean, look at it. We're here to educate our kids, and look at how much of our money and time is spent around figuring out how to bus our students. And so that, combined with my other thought, made me wonder, is there a better way to do this? And so I spent a whole day over at Ties looking at what they were doing. This was about a year ago. I went and met with the chief information OET officer, Gopal Khanna, learned about some of the work he was doing, and just began, and my staff did as well, began to examine how some of these concepts might go forward. In talking to the Department of Education, I learned that they, too, were working on a similar initiative, and that they had talked to a consulting firm, Deloitte Touche, who was doing work on shared services in Pennsylvania. So I approached this consulting firm and talked to them, and they said they would be willing to just tell me about what they learned and to work with me in helping develop something. And so you'll hear from Steve Dahl from Deloitte Touche today about the work that they've done and how they approach this. But I tell you that story because, members, I want you to know that there's been no arrangement made with this consulting firm, that this has strictly been in an advisory capacity to create the bill that you have before you, that this bill has been working with the staff and talking to other people to figure out how we might put an idea out there. And so in plain, simple terms, the idea is that wouldn't it be more efficient if school districts took their business services whenever possible? And, it may not always be possible, certainly won't be, but whenever possible, took the business services part of their charge out of the regular confines of the district and said, how can we, by putting all of our resources together, save money so that we generate more resources for the classroom? Because particularly in tough times, that's what we all want. We want more of our resources to go to the classroom. And so the bill lays forward an approach to doing that. Now, whenever you make a major change, and particularly to put it forward in the language of a bill, you know, you get a lot of concern. And so yesterday I got, you know, many people's concerns over what this might do to their district and to the way they structure things. And so I want everybody to know that we want to hear from people and that we want their input. And this is a beginning, and it is our hope that we will do this in partnership with the department, the district, so that at the end of the day we can all feel like this is a product of a committee and with public input. So before I ask Mr. Dahl to come forward and talk about his experience, Mr. Nauman, would you just take people through technically how the bill works?
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and members, Section 6 of the bill, there's two primary main sections of the permanent statutory change in the bill that effectuate the proposed changes. The first section is Section 6. Subdivision 1 requires that school districts or charter schools make purchases for goods and services from an approved list. Senator Bonhoeff, you may not be happy with the sound of my voice. I apologize for that. Subdivision 2 requires the Commissioner of Education to develop and maintain an approved list of approved vendors for given services that are delineated in Subdivision 3. So the notion here is that if a good or service, is listed in Subdivision 3, then it is one of those services that the department should develop and maintain the list of. So if it's not a good or service on that list, it would not be maintained. School districts are required and are permitted in Subdivision 4 to make joint purchasing arrangements. That authority exists in law already, but we want it to be clear here. So, Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to skip now to Section 9, which is the next main piece of the bill. Under Subdivision 1, the Commissioner is required to develop a process for determining and selecting service providers. They're required to have at least two options for every charter and school district for a given good or service. The Commissioner is given authority to negotiate with shared services providers to an established and agreed price that could save money if that's their choice. The Commissioner has the authority to remove service providers from the approved list if they don't meet the stated goals in the legislation of promoting high-quality goods or services, improved service delivery, or increased efficiency. Subdivision 2 establishes that the kinds of vendors that would be eligible to be selected. Regional service cooperatives are made automatically eligible under the language of the bill. Other vendors may be school districts, charter schools, or private service providers. And the criteria that the department is given for selecting eligibility is to promote high quality goods and services, improve service delivery, efficiency, and economy of operation. The department is required in Subdivision 3 to make additional approvals or remove approvals based on the goods or services that is delineated in the earlier section. So the way this works is if the legislature chose to delete, if this were enacted into law and the legislature chose at a future point in time to not do food services, for example, then the department would dynamically be required under this piece of law to remove those from the list, and school districts would then be allowed to make purchases wherever they wanted. Conversely, if you added additional services to that previous section of law, you would not have to go back and give the department authority to create a list for those school districts or for those vendors. Does that make sense? The whole point of this is to create savings. And so Subdivision 4 requires the commissioner by school district and charter school to create a measurement of savings, how much is actually saved. And that's under Subdivision 4. And those savings by each school district must be allocated to the classroom. So if a school district, keeping the math simple, saves $100, that money in permanent law must be allocated to the classroom.
So I just want to underline that because when we talk about savings, we're not talking about using the savings to balance the budget. We are talking about using the savings to make sure that we give our school districts additional resources to do under local control what they think would most impact student achievement.
So, Madam Chair, or
Mr. Melman.
Apologies. Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, Subdivision 5 requires the commissioner to make a report to the Education Finance Committees of the legislature on the savings created. It also gives the commissioner the authority to recommend additional goods and services that could be included in the shared service structure in the future. So that's the permanent law change. And all of that is fairly self-contained, and under the language of the bill, that's how the system would work in beginning in fiscal 2012. However, in the first 2 years of the program, there is some uncodified language that presumes the hiring of a consultant to help the state move from the environment that we're in now into a shared service environment. That's covered under Section 10. It assumes that the department, it requires the Department of Education to enter a two-year contract with a consultant to make recommendations about combining services in order to promote the improve service delivery efficiency and economy of operation. Requires the Department of Education and the consultant to develop an implementation plan for all school districts to participate in the shared service environment, and that they would work with the department to develop the initial list. The language in Section 10 also requires that whatever consultant is selected, that consultant be agreed to be paid on a contingency. In other words, a percentage of the total savings. I apologize, members.
Thank you for doing it, Mr. Nauman, in this.
That percentage cannot exceed 5% of the savings. So for fiscal year 2010, if you saved $100 statewide, $5 of that would be eligible to be remitted to the consultant. But as members know how the education finance system works, the savings would be accrued to the school district, and it would not be savings that we could, in a sense, recapture. So what we have to do is to create a deduction of the we have to create a deduction in order to make the money available. This is getting distracting, isn't it? Okay, I apologize. It sounds a lot worse than it really feels. Yeah, that might be helpful. So if the school district is saving $100 and the consultant is agreeing to be paid on a contingency and we make a big appropriation to school districts, we haven't figured out a mechanism in order to get the money to the consultant. So the way that works is we create a deduction equal to the percentage that the consultant agrees to be paid. The consultant and the department agree to pay that individual consultant. So the way it would work is if the savings percentage that's agreed to with the consultant ends up being, say, 3%, then that is deducted from each school district off their general education payment. And that's what the language in Section 11 does. Paragraph 1, again, keep in mind, members, this is only for 2 years. Paragraph A of Section 11 sets forth a 5% deduction, but then that deduction, the department is given the authority to adjust that percentage based on what's actually agreed to in the contract with the consultant.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
Because in the permanent law, school districts are required to allocate that savings to the classroom, we have to have a notwithstanding clause to give them authority to only allocate a portion, because in the first 2 years, districts will be giving some percentage of that money, or the state will be withholding some percentage of that money. So if it again ends up being that 3%, then 97% of the savings would be allocated to the classroom. Does that make sense?
Mr. Nauman, thank you. And I know that, and Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I mean, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that there's been a lot of concern over that piece of the legislation, and that's why I asked Mr. Nauman to go into such detail about that. But again, this is just one idea put forward. We would be working closely with the department to figure out how this would work, and the department would very likely come back and recommend that there be an ultimate cap, depending on how big the savings was. The school districts would have a way to verify that those savings were real. You know, this is a technical piece of the bill, and I just would urge people not to get focused on that at this point. That's very early in this overall discussion. Those contract issues and how we approach that will get worked out. The other thing I wanted to say before I ask Mr. Dahl from Deloitte to come up is this is a movement that's happening all over, you know, in different industries, in local government, cities and counties. I think our Department of Admin has been charged with researching how this might work for cities and counties. So we are going to be seeing more of this approach to restructuring and reengineering our business processes going way beyond school districts. In fact, yesterday there was an article in the New York Times talking about President-elect Obama's latest appointment. He appointed a chief efficiency officer, a woman who worked for McKinsey & Company for many years. So I think what this financial unraveling is doing is really saying that besides finding a way to stop, you know, our spending and debt issues, we have to reinvent the way that we're doing business in every area in order to be competitive. And so I don't want to approach this session like, what are the cuts going to look like? Because, you know, to me, that's not a way to go forward. So, you know, I'd like us to approach it is what can we do proactively to move education to the next place for our students. So I know you've all got questions, and I will welcome them, but if we could now call Mr. Dahl and ask him to review the work that he's done with regard to shared services.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Mr. Dahl, if you could give your name for the record.
Certainly. Steve Dahl with Deloitte Consulting out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I live in Roseville, Minnesota. Mr. Chair and committee members, Senator Bonhoff, everyone here present today, thanks for having me here today and inviting me to talk a little bit about what we've done at Deloitte and what we've seen in the area of education shared services. And I do have a few extra copies of the what I'm walking through that I'll leave over here on the side. I think it's like a number of people came in and perhaps more than we initially laid out copies for. So please go ahead and grab a copy if you'd like while we're starting up, and I'll do my sign in here as well.
Okay. Mr. Dahl.
All right. So, Driving More Money into the Classroom is the name of the research study that we did. We have Deloitte Research is a think tank within Deloitte. Deloitte, we are one of the biggest service providers to state governments around consulting on a variety of technology, efficiency, and effectiveness matters. And so one of the things we do routinely is we have a think tank that goes and researches critical issues and opportunities that are going to be helpful, we think will be helpful and effective for our clients, and then we provide that information for people's consideration and hopefully to generate value and opportunity for our clients. So the slides I'm going to walk through here briefly are highlights from a study we did called Driving More Money into the Classroom. And that full study is available on our website for anyone who would like to get a full copy of that. So a couple things we looked at when we looked at shared services and education. And by way of background, I think everyone here hopefully understands and realizes shared services is not a new concept, not a new concept for business, not a new concept for government, and not a new concept for education. It's been around for quite a while, really since the 90s was really when it took off. We've helped more than 250 different organizations in the U.S. and around the globe implement shared services. And so we studied what are some of the benefits, and I'll just point to a couple of them here. One is for when it relates to school districts, is well, one is to save money, and that's what we've been talking a lot about here right now. When you're in a situation of financial crisis or a downturn, and you look at, well, what are our options? Well, do we close schools? Do we consolidate districts? Do we lay off teachers? You know, very, very difficult decisions and things people have to grapple with. Is there a different way? Is there something different we can do other than those to carve into the deficit and the changes that you have to deal with? And the answer is yes, there is. Shared services is another approach to look at when you have less, what are ways that you can deliver the same services you need to deliver with those less dollars, right? One of the ways you do it is share. So the other advantage is it retains a local control of the classroom to the districts, which is obviously the critical part, and allows you to look at other options rather than just cuts and consolidation. It really allows you to look at reform that's permanent in nature. So it's not something that you get this year and next year and it goes away. It's something you get this year and next year and continues on into the future. One of the other highlights in our study was that where were administrative costs the highest and the lowest? Where were the efficiencies? And a couple things that I'll point out. One was that smaller districts, we found in the study, had the best generated the typically the best education outcomes, but also were the most costly in many areas of administrative services because there's not the scale to benefit from things like purchasing and IT and so forth. But also large districts were also equally costly and in some cases more costly, and they had diseconomies of scale in providing different administrative services and oversight. It was actually the mid-sized districts that were the most efficient, which was, I think, eye-opening to a number of people to say that was where the economies were in general. So look at if you're a small district, your big district, a mid-sized district, what can you do to gain the right economies of scale for things like purchasing and IT and back office functions, front office functions, and shared services really provided an avenue to do that. So that really gets to, you know, looking at where the education dollars go and really studying where do you spend your money and how can you most effectively do this? Well, where does shared services really play? And the answer is they play best in transactional items or in subject matter expert areas. Most typically those happen outside the classroom. And so that's where a lot of the focus of shared services flows to. So what is shared services? This is a common issue or misconception people have of saying, well, shared services decentralizing everything? No. Is it centralizing everything in a command and control type structure? No, it's not that either. It's really looking at pulling some of the best things, some of the best things of decentralized kind of connection to the customer and the local community, as well as some of the benefits of the centralized items, which are having standards, having volume to get cost savings, leveraging contracts, and pulling those kind of the best of those worlds into a new shared organization. What do those organizations look like? Well, they can look like a lot of different things. I make a couple points around this. They can, it can be a cooperative. When obviously the state has been doing shared services for a while in the regional service co-ops and delivered some value in that area. And we're really talking about here, I think, an idea of how do you expand that? How do you do more of that? How do you really get the full benefit of shared services across the state? So you can do it through cooperatives that are education only. You can do it through cooperatives that kind of link to municipalities, cities, and counties, and looking at sharing facilities and sharing different operations. You can look at kind of linking it together with state operations and looking at, so you look at contracts and you say, you kind of dig into the detail of implementation, you look at who has the best deals and the best contracts that can be leveraged to move forward. Well, you might find that the Department of Administration has some great contracts and purchasing that everyone wants to leverage. You might find the Office of Enterprise Technology has a number of those. You might find individual districts have found a great way to purchase a particular commodity, and those are things that you would want to kind of bring into the mix and work through in the shared service model. So it's kind of pulling the best, and pooling the best from everyone, and then bringing it into a manner where everyone can share it, use it, and up the game, up the level of what you can do in those areas. So what are some of those areas that we typically see and we found in our study are really key to or ripe for shared services? This is a list that we found and we've used and in our work and studying. You'll see things like purchasing and facilities and IT and transportation. So a lot of things that I think are being discussed in the bill are things that other states, other businesses, and other districts have found that this is where they can save money. Senator Bonhoff mentioned that we've been working with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. They started a program many months back, and they did it before the current financial crisis that kind of came on us all in the last 120 days. They developed a pilot program with a network of 38 different districts that they call a program they call Common Sense to look at and study the different areas that are highlighted here and look at how can we pull together shared operations, shared contracts, so forth to harvest some benefit by pooling things together and sharing. And they're at this point in the process of implementing recommendations in those areas and expected to save anywhere from 5 to 15% on each of these given areas. A couple things that are important to understand and note when you look at a particular area. So, for example, when you're looking at purchasing, you may find one area that that you cut across the different districts and you look at the spending pattern, you say, well, that particular area, we've done about as much as we can and the potential savings there is 0% or 1%. So once you get into the contracts, that one area you may not do much with. You may have another area that really dig into it and say, we haven't taken advantage of the pooling of the purchasing volume and people and so forth in that particular area, and that savings in that area may be 30%, 40%. So when you look at 5 to 15% of savings, that really shows kind of a blend of when you get into the details, some things, just when you work through it, some of the things you say, we're not going to do anything here. In other areas, there's big savings. So 5 to 15% is a blend of what we see in savings across those different areas. Getting it right. Well, there's implementing shared service, like implementing any kind of change, is not easy. Change is difficult. If it wasn't, we would all done this a long time ago, right? Change is hard. And so, you have this often times like this where you have an economic crisis that really drives now that change because the alternatives are bleak. And so now we say this is hard, but it's worth doing. It's a good thing to do, and it's certainly a lot better than alternatives as you look at those opportunities. So what are some lessons around getting it right? Well, a few of them are, one, spending the time to work with state agencies that have contracts, with the service centers that have contracts, the districts that have contracts, understanding those, and then looking at which ones are the right ones to leverage, and looking to develop statewide arrangements and pooling those. So it's really investing and spending the time when you're implementing to do that due diligence, get everyone involved, and as one team kind of working together to kind of drive the value by leveraging those best arrangements and best setups that people have invested a lot of time into. Second thing that's often a very critical issue is this a mandatory program or is it a voluntary type program? And that really gets to what kind of savings do you really want to generate out of it? If you want to have some small or incremental savings, incremental improvement, voluntary is something that works. If you want to have significant change, significant dollar value captured, I'd suggest the only way you really get that is by having a mandatory program, because often the people that opt out of a particular area are the people that may have the best contracts or may have the biggest volumes, and so then the rest of the districts cannot benefit from those savings if it's not pulled together. So if you really want to drive big change, mandatory is important. Third point I'd make is on local vendors is often a very significant issue. So what happens to local vendors, local communities, when you're looking at statewide or or regional type arrangements? That's always a big issue. There are ways to deal with that, such as you can require in contracts that you put together that different vendors that may become one of two or three different statewide approved vendors, that they've actually worked out arrangements with local vendors to have local delivery in individual communities where that's important. So there's ways to deal with that. It is a common issue and an important issue to deal with when you get into implementation. Last two points we make on here is creating a governance board. So kind of who is leading this and driving this, making sure that savings are being measured, that standards are being adhered to, that contracts are being developed, that people can work with, that service quality is there. So a governance board or entity, in this case, we're talking about the Department of Education leading that with the district, that really provides that oversight. And then also to get the right balance between flexibility and accountability. It's an exercise that takes working through to get to the right answers for individual areas and individual people. Individual districts. So there's a balance that you have to reach in individual areas, and so getting that right connection between accountability and flexibility. Last key point and slide from our study, what can state government do to really make it happen? There's a variety of things listed here that we found different states have found to be effective. There's what I'll call the technical assistance, which is having state agencies that have major capabilities and contracts in areas such as enterprise technology or administration or management and budget and so forth, that can provide contracts or assistance or other types of capabilities that can enable the process. There are financial incentives that can be put in place as one area is kind of, I'll call, the carrot of saying if you're very effective at this, you're going to get some different financial incentives. There's a flip side of that, of the what I'll call the stick, which is to say if you're not fully participating and not helping the overall state in this, there can be penalties put in place around funding as kind of another category that the state can take on to really help drive these things forward. So that's an overview out of our Deloitte research study on what we found in education shared services and perhaps some thoughts on how it could relate to what the state is looking to embark on. Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair, let's take questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dahl. We do have some questions. Senator Olson first.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Mr. Dahl, as you were talking about creating another governance board and some of the oversight, I get a little apprehensive if we're going to create another bureaucracy that's of the large scale that may, in fact, reduce or eat up some of the actual efficiencies or the costs of them that might be gained. How can one prevent that kind of thing from happening?
Mr. Dahl?
Well, I think there's a variety of ways to do it. One is to try to, you know, to make, you know, keep it simple as far as what it is they're supposed to do and who's involved. So the idea is leveraging existing infrastructure. One of the advantages I think Minnesota has over many other states when you think about embarking onto this type of a program is you already have a structure in place with service cooperatives around the state that are providing different levels of services. You have the Department of Education that is providing oversight over some different activities, and you also have Department of Administration, Enterprise Technology, other areas within the state that are also kind of working on statewide initiatives that can be leveraged. So it's really taking and pulling together pieces that already exist so that they can be more high-performing, functioning at a different level rather than creating new structure, new body, new dollars, if you will.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, just slightly unrelated question. In some of your slides, you had shaded boxes. Some of them copied. Some of them turned solid black. And I was trying to pick one. There actually is writing in there, and you can strain and see it in a few places. But about that we cannot all be small, that one. And also there was use about across the country, something about a 40% is being spent in non-instructional. I didn't get. Could you somehow convey a copy that wouldn't black out if we copied it? And we'll.
Senator Olson.
Absolutely.
Senator Olson, I think I was just thinking of the same thing, that we should get a good copy and then we can make copies and,
yes,
and put them in your folder next time. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Dahl and Senator Bonhoff. A couple of questions.
Okay.
And Mr. Dahl, maybe you could respond to this. What we're contemplating here is using some structure to do statewide or some shared purchasing.
Yep.
And the question I have is, it's conceivable under that arrangement, and I think you even alluded to it in your argument, to do mandated rather than voluntary compliance to this, is that it's possible that the state or the overall cost to, say, providing food service or transportation or something, that it could be lower. But it's also under that scenario possible that some local schools might see an increase compared to what they're currently doing. And my question is, if that were to happen, would that be considered a positive outcome or not? And or is there a requirement in this structure that every school district see a reduction in their cost for these things? What is your assessment of that kind of a question?
So if I understand the question, is really, are there scenarios when you look at different areas where there are some people that actually end up having higher costs than they would in today's situation? And if so, how do you deal with that?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Dahl, I come from a business background and did a lot of work with process improvement, and I know what you're talking about here. And I know it's very often the case that when you do that in a business environment that you see an overall saving, although individual business units might have higher costs than they used to have for that particular activity. And I'm just asking that if that happens in this kind of a plan, would that be considered a positive outcome given that the entire structure of education state would see a reduction, even though individual school districts might see some increases in these things? I'm just asking if that's likely to happen and whether that would be a positive outcome under this scenario.
Well, Mr. Dahl.
I would say in certain areas that's possible, right? But I'd say the areas we're looking at, which are, you know, purchasing and technology and facilities, some of those other areas, and developing kind of new and different contracts around those areas, I'd say it's, you know, if it's done well as far as bringing that purchasing power together and leveraging the best of existing situations and contracts, it'd be unlikely that anyone would see costs go up in a particular area. When you're absolutely right. When you look at kind of pulling different functions out of one component of organization, you can end up with spots where you have winners and losers. But the state overall saves a lot, right? That is a common scenario in certain aspects of reengineering or restructuring. I think what we're talking about here and what we're looking at, the scope of what's in the bill, as I understand it, I don't think you'd see that situation.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Dahl, I guess what I get from your answer is that it is possible, and I guess the question that I would have for the committee to contemplate going forward is that I think it is an advantage to say to the state is going to save money. Mm-hmm. I guess I would only entertain that if it could be done without causing some schools to have higher costs. In other words, if we implemented a program where we saw some overall saving but the net was in some districts there was increased costs, I would say that would not be a positive outcome.
Right.
And to the extent that that were to happen, if we do make this mandatory, I think there would have to be some way to make sure that if that occurred, that there would be ways for people to return to what they had been doing before at a lower cost. And I understand that that's a tricky issue, but I think it speaks to the we do call our school districts independent school districts.
Mm-hmm.
And from that standpoint, it is a little different than looking at it as a whole entity. And I think there's a philosophical question at root here of if it's really wise to have independent districts, or should we have one state system like Hawaii might have, for example. But just another question here before I give up my time to other people here. You mentioned in your presentation about, I think, in Pennsylvania, 5 to 15% mm-hmm. Savings. What is the dollar amount in Minnesota that we would contemplate? If we take all these things that are on the table that could be shared and that some X amount of money and then some percentage of that would be eligible to be reduced, what is that total target that is potentially out there to be saved in terms of dollars? Do you have an idea what that number would be?
Mr. Dahl.
Yes. Thank you for the questions, and definitely understand here the point of wanting to have some kind of an exception process if there's a district that could prove that they were going to not be able to save in a scenario, that they have some way to kind of prove their way out of that, right, and be able to keep their costs as low as possible. On what are the potential savings in dollars? You talked about in Pennsylvania, and I talked about 5 to 15% savings. I'll tell you in our broader example of 250 different organizations we've worked with in doing shared services, the typical range is 10 to 30%. And the difference is, with Pennsylvania, one of the key differences is whether that's voluntary or mandatory, and the kind of savings you can get out of it. So, but what are we talking about in Minnesota? You're looking at a total, spend of non-instructional spend of somewhere north of $2 billion. You look at, a smaller portion of that that deals with the areas that are being discussed, I think, in the bill. And if you look at, what is the potential of savings in a biennial period? So, that really drives or gets at how quickly can you get moving? How quickly can things be implemented? And I'd say to have a significant impact in this biennium, things have to move very, very fast, and the implementation and the cooperation around that would have to move at a pace that I'd say is somewhat unnatural for kind of the typical process in the state, as far as people would really have to drive it forward. But I think you could be talking, biennial savings of $1 million a week or over $100 million in the biennium? Yes, you could very easily.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Dahl, I appreciate that. I think what I would be more comfortable with at some point, and I know today probably isn't the day, but just to put this out there so that we can have this as we have the discussion going forward, you list on page 6 of your presentation that various areas that are possible to see savings through shared purchasing structures, and the bill contemplates certain things. And all those areas have costs, some of which would be would benefit from shared, others would not. There may be people costs, for example, that are going to be constant, whether those things are done through a shared structure or not. And I think it would be important for this committee to have an idea of what the, as close as we can get, a firm estimate of what those dollars might look like. What is that potential dollar amount that we're going after? Because I think that, you talk about building a business case, and that to me is what this is about, that if you're going to go through the work, and it would be work to make this change, and you're right, it would be significant and difficult, that you have to have some idea of what the payoff is and that it has to make sense, that if you're going to go through this for a relatively modest payoff, then I think you really have to question whether the effort is worth payoff. I think second and related to that, and maybe Senator Bonhoff, you can jump in on this too, that one of the things in the bill provides for that the savings get allocated to the classroom, and I think I would like to get some clarity on what does that exactly mean. Are we talking about certain UFARS categories that the money would be spent in, and if so, what those categories are? If we're saying that we're not going to see actual reduction in spending but transferring of some dollars to another, then we ought to try to identify exactly what that is. So I understand I'm asking a question you probably don't have a firm answer for, but I think as we go forward, it would be helpful to get a pretty clear picture of what the potential out there is that we're trying to get at.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you. And Senator Hand, your first set of questions around, you know, would some districts get hurt? Both you and I represent the mid-sized district, and there are other people here who represent around this table the big district, and some of you represent the little district, and so we all wear the hat of, you know, the concerns that we bring from our own districts. And I know as somebody who represents the mid-sized district, that would be the last thing that I would want is to have, because we've seen statistically, and I have seen the data, that the mid-sized district is the most efficient. And so to put everybody into this, would they get hurt? And the hard part about doing this in terms of us sitting at this table doing it is the way we make change is we draft a bill. And so a bill is law, and everything's so hard and fast that that's why we all react like, oh, my gosh, what are we doing? This is the law now that everybody should do this. And so I think that in order for real change to happen, we have to have the tension between, yes, we are drafting legislation, but we're also wanting to make sure there's the flexibility in the business process to account for things that don't make good sense. Like, we don't want to shut down local businesses, and we want to encourage districts to buy food as close to where they are so that we have kids, you know, having fresh vegetables and fruit. And so there's kind of the common sense heart and soul of the matter that we are not ever going to let go of. And so, but yet we're drafting laws, and it's, we want to make sure what we draft people can follow. And so I appreciate the questions, and I think that's why I've chosen to go the path of putting in a consultant in here, because I think it's going to take a business consultant. And again, I'm not advocating one or another. It's going to take a consultant, and I think that's why the President-elect Obama picked this woman from McKinsey, who's got some experience in navigating these things. With regard to the last question, the intent of the legislation is to be more loose with regard to classroom, because it's to communicate the importance of local control. And so, you know, that would be up to the committee to deal with that, but it is the intent of the author to say that's really up to the school districts. The other thing I just wanted to mention is, you know, I began this whole thing with my big aha when I got this idea, and I want to make sure everybody knows that I'm not so arrogant to think that that was when the idea came. You know, we have been doing this all over the state to one degree or another. We've got our co-ops. They were invented at the wisdom of the legislature many years ago, and I think we're considered one of the leaders in the country based on what we do with our co-ops. And so my having an aha was, you know, my own personal get involved in this legislation, but I know different people have been carrying this torch in different ways all along, including people in this room. I've had people call me and tell me amazing stories of the savings they're already doing, and those are the things we want to harness and move forward with.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. It would be, going back to Senator Hand's question, it would be, I think, helpful to have that clearer picture of services that create, like on page 6, you list some of the services, but if we could list out those services and the dollars spent in those areas, as you move forward, then you can kind of have more of a sense of what areas would be have more potential for savings, and then obviously some areas, as you mentioned, Senator Bonhoff, would be more sensitive, you know, whether it's, you know, textbooks or instructional areas or what, but that would be, I think, give us a little more of a clearer picture. Senator Saltzman and then Senator Roebling.
And on that point, Mr. Chair, and first a question for Senator Bonhoff, and we did talk about this, but just to clarify, because last night at the chamber dinner, the governor referenced this would be a good program for textbooks. And we talked earlier about is the intent of this that there be some sort of statewide curriculum in that you buy certain textbooks. And we shared that would be a concern, at least to me. I know with the reading, one of the concerns with some of the reading legislation is that, oh, this is creating – It's going to change the kind of, you know, curriculum in schools. I would argue it's not. But could you just talk to that? Because I think there is, just to clarify, because that would not be a mandated area for like the shared services, you know, from our discussion. So maybe if you could just clarify.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, textbooks are not included. We're talking about office supplies as it relates to operation maintenance. That would be considered classroom. Could there be savings in textbooks? Yes. Would we encourage districts to talk to each other and find ways? That would be great. But this is not about standardization of curriculum, which is a teaching and learning issue, which is outside of the purview of this bill. Great. Some other legislator may carry that. But.
So just to clarify.
Senator Saltzman.
So then one more question for Mr. Dahl. I see that on page 6, facilities and real estate is an area of high return. And I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit on that. And we are going to be having, as part of a working group, a charter school lease aid discussion. And I don't want to get into that in real depth, but I think it's real interesting. If you have some specific examples or what you meant in that area, it would be very helpful.
Mr. Dahl.
Thank you. I think a couple of things on facilities and real estate, things that can be done in the short run, right? I'll start with that. Things that can be done in the short run are much more around management and purchasing and so forth, and that's things like greening your schools, energy efficiency. Those are areas that are and having some programs, you know, and contracts in place that enable that. So those are things that can be done very quickly and can drive some reasonable savings into the classroom. So that's kind of point number one. Number two, on when you look at the longer term, there are, you know, significant dollars in real estate and facilities, and that gets into looking at where are there opportunities, potentially where are there opportunities to share facilities. So you might have in a rural area, an opportunity to share facilities between a city and a county and a school district, or between a school district and a Minscu campus, or other types of sharing arrangements that can enable growth without adding more square footage, or can allow restacking of where the work is done and enable getting out of leases that you don't need anymore. Or you can have, you know, some capabilities that people can leverage to better negotiate, you know, contracts and leases. And that's kind of that technical assistance that can be set up and provided through those arrangements that just help people negotiate better deals, because you have people with more specialized skill and knowledge in a, you know, in the shared service center that can help districts in those kind of arrangements. So those are some of the types of things that can be done can offer some good savings. Some are shorter term. The other, you know, because there's existing contracts and so forth, can be a little bit longer term in nature to get to.
Senator Salt. Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a real hang-up on the mandate part of this proposal. In an ideal world, we would have a program that could offer these prices to our school districts, and all of them, I believe, want to save money. And I think most of them would participate, but there will be some cases where it won't be practical for them to participate in certain things. And it reminds me very much of the statewide health insurance plan for school staff. And I was opposed to that, largely because some districts were going to be hurt by it, and some of them were in my district. And I did not feel comfortable putting my districts in a position where they would not benefit from a proposal like that. And I guess that, you know, I do want common sense, but I don't know that the state bureaucracy has more common sense than the local school officials. And I really trust them to make good fiscal decisions in a time of fiscal shortages. They're going to do, I believe, what is best for their students. And I don't know that we are going to devise a better plan than they will come up with. But we could set up a cooperative and make that available on a statewide basis. And I really think that would be the ideal situation. And I really hope that's where we head in the end.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, my question kind of hitchhikes on what Senator Roebling is just talking about, because at the time that we're looking at, is there any mandate relief that we could give to school districts that would allow them to better cope with the fiscal situation that we're in? You're in the financial business. When you talk about a concept like this, mm-hmm. at a time when there are a great deal of fiscal pressures, is a mandate then as important, or is it required, or is the making available of either information or some other structure, as Senator Roebling has said, sufficient that districts will in fact pursue it, rather than to sacrifice some of the services and the quality that they would like to deliver if they can save money in this way? I mean, have you factored that in? I don't know when you did this in Pennsylvania, if the economics were similar to what they are now. But we're in a unique time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's obviously when things got very expensive, and particularly in fuel, it changed a lot of our behavior
mm-hmm.
Without telling us what we had to do. And so is this likely to be, or can you factor that in as to what school districts will do and whether the mandate is that important at this time?
Mr. Nall, I think that's a good point about the mandates. And we did send a letter out, and I just want to add this, requesting superintendents and school districts to try to funnel in suggestions and ideas about mandate costs so that we could actually maybe try to address that. That was actually brought up last night at the chamber, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Department of Health requirement that seemed to be ridiculous when the example was brought up. But I think that is an area, too, that I would invite anyone that's here to make available to us, because I'm sure many of you who are out there on the front lines would have examples of how we might be able to save or make some modest changes and save some money for the district.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dahl, do you have any kind of comments relative to that notion as to what role of our overall fiscal condition might have on behavior versus the mandate?
Mr. Dahl.
Thank you. Senator, I had a couple of thoughts on that. One is, are districts more likely to opt into doing something in a down fiscal or financial time than another time? And I think the answer to that is yes. That they are more likely to opt into a program in a situation that we face today. The second part, though, I'd suggest here is that there'll still be some that don't, and that hurts the overall pool, and it would impede the ability to get the kind of savings that you can get for all the districts across the state. Third part is time. Going out and kind of having the I'll call it, it's almost like a sales discussion or process, and that has to occur with each of the districts on what are they in, what are they out of, and so forth. And that takes a lot of time. And when you're looking at wanting to get savings in the biennium to avoid, you know, layoffs, to avoid closings, that time can cost very significant amounts of dollars that drive decisions that have to be made around layoffs that people wouldn't want to make. So a time piece is also a critical part when you look at the current situation to be able to kind of get to an answer and get to contracts quickly so that savings can be available for districts to to use in their decision-making process.
So Mr. Chairman, you were earlier talking about, I think, the fact that some large districts that have been able to negotiate individually and get good prices are the very ones that wouldn't want to be a part of this, so that their costs could, in fact, their lower costs could, in fact, be shared with others. Is that kind of the rationale that you're talking about?
Mr. Dahl?
Yeah, that's sometimes the case. So you have... you may have a particular district that negotiated a great deal on a particular commodity, and they have some good purchasing power, and they don't see a lot in it for them to pool their dollars flowing through a statewide contract. I would argue that they would still, even if they think they have a good deal, they're going to get a better deal when that purchasing volume is for the state as a whole versus just their district. So that could be a starting point that can generate even, you know, incremental additional savings for them that will be smaller than everyone else, but still be savings. But that drives a much more significant saving value for the rest of the districts. Without them in the pool, the amount of savings those other districts could get will be much less.
We do have a number of others that would like to testify, and so I think we'll move on. Thank you very much, and I'm sure that as this moves forward, I'm sure there'll be questions, and then we'll also make copies of your presentation that actually, you know, all the blocks and all the type and stuff will show up. So,
thank you.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you. Michelle Weber from the department is here. I'm happy to comment. I didn't have her on the testimony list, so I apologize, but so if you would like to hear the department's perspective.
Sure. Why don't we do that right now?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Weber.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education, and we have been enjoying a good working relationship with Senator Bonhoff over the last several months on this issue. We have also heard from a variety of stakeholders in the last couple of days noting their concerns. And so we are very much looking forward to continuing to work with Senator Bonhoff as well as the stakeholders to revise the bill and work on language that will help districts to utilize the current investment that they have in the K-12 system.
Ms. Weber, one of the questions that I had as I was reading through the legislation yesterday was, I believe yesterday at the press conference, Commissioner Badgerow from the Department of Administration was also present. And I think, I don't know if where I got the information, but I believe the Department of Administration currently has some semblance of a program.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. They have a cooperative purchasing venture that the Department of Administration has created, and we're going to be meeting very shortly with the Department of Administration as well as the Office of Enterprise Technology to look at how we can meld the existing ventures that they have going on with this initiative as well. So we'll be working very closely with them on this.
All right. That was my question. So, Senator Kalk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is just, there's a great deal. Section 9 deals with all the duties for the Department of Education. Seems like there's quite a few things for you all to do. And I'm just wondering if there's any concern, given that you're likely looking at a static or potentially reduced budget in providing those services, or are you going to be coming to us for more money for this? What are your thoughts on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Koch. We have looked closely at this. We will rely on existing state resources. We will not be asking for additional funding to manage this. One of the ways the bill is currently structured is having a consultant in place provides some of the support to the department for some of the work, as well as being able to utilize the Department of Administration expertise, etc. We would envision doing contracts that would be in place for 5 years. So we would do an RFP at one point in time, select the list of vendors that would be identified for schools, and have those contracts be in place for a period of 5 years. So it would be a significant amount of work that would be concentrated at a certain period of time, but then once the contracts were in place, then the schools would have the opportunity to work directly with those contractors for their services.
Thank you.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a couple of questions on the same section for you. One would be how I'm assuming by the language of the bill and the thing that is contemplated that the vendors that are out there today providing the services of various schools, some of them would no longer be vendors going forward, that there would be criteria established that would eliminate some of those vendors. And I just am wondering if you have in the department given some thought to what kind of criteria you're going to use to apply to potential vendors and who would qualify and who would not.
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, I think those are the types of things we'd want to talk very closely with the Department of Administration on. And there have been, throughout the talks in the last couple of weeks, we have talked with Senator Bonhoff as well as Representative Winkler about whether or not they might identify specific vendors like the education service co-ops or so forth that are already providing these types of services, whether or not they might be identified in the bill, whether or not everybody would compete. Those are the types of things that have been bounced around in the discussions.
And Senator Hamm.
And Mr. Chairman, and I guess what I would hope that we would have at some point before we get to the final action on the bill is from your department, here is the criteria that we will apply. And I'm not asking for a specific list of vendors, but these are the criteria that we contemplate using. I think that would be helpful. Second question I have for you is if we go to this structure and you have in a local school system an issue over one of these services, whether it's transportation or food service, and the local folks there are unhappy or dissatisfied or have some problem, who do they bring that complaint to, the department or to the local school board? And if they bring it to the local school board, how will the local school board fix that problem?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, I think those are the things that we're talking about, too, in the department. We're talking about things such as what liability would be placed upon the department for certifying these vendors. So those are the types of things that we need to consult with our own resources on as well. Where would folks go if they have complaints about services? Because the contract would ultimately be with the department and the vendor the way the bill is currently structured. So it would be the department's responsibility to enforce that contract. If there's problems, that would be our responsibility. And so what sort of thing do we open ourselves up to? What sort of provisions do we put in the contracts to address those types of things?
Well, and Mr. Chairman, and I guess that's
Senator
what I'm getting at, is that coming from a school board, I know that there are oftentimes problems with things like transportation and food service and other things that are not instructional related necessarily. But typically when you have those complaints, the people call the school board members and they say, we got this problem. Who do I talk to? And you help them get in touch with the administrator and you try to work out something. But if the department is responsible for these things, I don't know yet what the mechanism the department has to interact with parents and individuals at this local school level to do the kind of problem solving that may occur or be necessary around some of these things. And is that something that would be contemplated then being created, is some sort of a quasi school board kind of structure at the department level to handle the local issues that come up over the delivery of these services or the problems that attend to it. Is that something that is being contemplated?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, that is not something we envisioned, that we would create sort of a overriding body. I think that what we envisioned is that we would utilize existing complaint mechanisms that the department has in place. We do have several contracts. We have grant contracts with service providers, and when a parent has a problem, they call the department. We investigate that concern that's been brought forward and then take appropriate action with our contractor or our grantee. So we would, I would envision it being something similar to that.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, and the reason I'm asking partly is just on the handout we got from the consultant from Deloitte on page 8, that one of the things they talk about is creating a governance board. And I was assuming maybe falsely that that would be, there would be some governing board at the state level that would be managing the contracts and then also dealing with these things, but we may be too early in this to have that sorted out. But I guess I'm curious about how this works, and if we are trying to create mechanisms for local accountability for things that are going on in local schools, I'm a little concerned about taking a significant portion of an operation and taking that management and accountability out of the hands of the local folks and how you deal with issues that arise in those areas.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I will certainly invite Senator Bonhoff if she has more information to weigh in on this as well. It could be that some of that is handled within the contract, the section of the bill that deals with a contractor that the department would hire to help with the planning and implementation of this.
I would just remind members that we will not take action on this. This is just for informational, and Senator Bonhoff has assured me that she would like to work with people, anyone basically that has issues, after we have this hearing. So what I'd like to do is to be sure we get those who have mentioned their interest in testifying, give them an opportunity to give a short presentation, and then I'm sure this discussion will continue and should continue. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Next, we have Mr. Kuhnquist from the Association of Metropolitan School Districts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Scott Kuhnquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Appreciate the opportunity to offer some comments. And would like to start out by thanking Senator Bonhoff for bringing this initiative forward. We really appreciate her leadership and the work, the research that she has put into this issue, and to all of you that have worked on this. It's something that we really do want to work with you on. Clearly, in these tough economic times, we need to look for any savings and efficiencies we can. And so we do want to do that, and we pledge to work with you moving forward. And we do know that joint purchasing works. I mean, it clearly does, and the reason we know that is because we can point to a multitude of examples where it's actually already working and already in place. I thought I had a fairly good idea of the service sharing and joint purchasing that was going on out in the field, so to speak. But I can tell you, since the proposal was introduced,
exactly,
I've been inundated, just like Senator Bonhoff has been, with emails and phone calls and stories, with examples of what's going on out there that I frankly had no idea was going on. Just a couple of quick examples. Intermediate District 916, Northeast Metro, and Superintendent Hayes is here and could comment, but they have a number of examples. There's a 43-district consortium that has been in place for quite some time that has established joint purchasing program. They've experienced anywhere from 20 to 35% savings in some of the areas where they have established these joint purchasing contracts. They even have a purchasing manager that they share and will loan out basically to member districts to be able to use on a as-needed basis. The Anoka-Hennepin District several years ago initiated a joint purchasing contract for food products, and that has now been joined by 80 school districts. So 80 school districts across the state are purchasing food products together. Eden Prairie School District let me know that they will partner often with the University of Minnesota on software. They partner with Hennepin County on purchasing copy paper. They are a member of the Western States Cooperative Alliance, which is a multi-state initiative, actually, that joins together to purchase custodial equipment. Another example would be TIES. Many of you are familiar with TIES, and again, the Executive Director Schweitzer is here, could tell you about the joint purchasing power that they are able to bring and the service sharing in the areas of transportation, technology, professional development. And then, of course, the intermediate school districts and the service co-ops, with which many of you are familiar with. So I think it's just important to have an understanding that there is a considerable amount of joint purchasing and service sharing going on. And so what we want to do, I think, is build on those successes and make sure that as we move forward, we don't enact policies that would actually undermine or you know, harm those efforts that are already in place. We really appreciate that Senator Bonhoeff's indicated a willingness to work with us. And there are just a couple issues that I'll highlight that we want to work on in the draft. Number one is the mandatory nature. We're not quite convinced that we would need to have the mandatory aspect of the bill in order to realize significant savings. I understand the more you bring together, potentially the greater savings, but there are some trade-offs, I think, that you need to take into account as well. One thing to think about is, would you have the flexibility that you have if it's voluntary? Some of these prices fluctuate wildly. Things like copy paper, I mean, from one week to the next, the price on that can change dramatically. And if you're locked into a vendor list, then obviously you are limited in your choices. Another thing to think about is long-term contracts that are already in place. And as it's drafted right now, this would basically be effective immediately. And we don't think that we can put school districts in a position to break long-term contracts that are already in place. So that's just something that we would have to think about. We're not sure that the Department of Education is the best place to house this, and that is no criticism of the department, but we're not convinced that maybe they shouldn't focus their efforts on their core mission of education, and maybe we'd be better to look at the Department of Administration or the Office of Technology, which is already experienced and has expertise in this area, and have them expand on the state contracting process. And by the way, it was mentioned earlier, we already do have a system in place that allows local governmental units to piggyback on state contracts. And I've heard from a number of school districts that use that frequently, but they've also pointed out that it is not uncommon for them to find out that they can use their consortiums and get a better price than is available through the state contract price.
Maybe we ought to join
the consortium. One final thing, Mr. Chairman, is the if you do have a mandatory list of state-approved vendors, you have to, presumably, then you're going to set up a specification process, or they're going to set up specs that have to be met. And the reality is different districts have different needs, different requirements, and so it's hard to envision how you would draw up those specs to make sure that they're going to meet the needs of each and every school district. So, but again, I want to emphasize, we really appreciate Senator Bonhoeff bringing this forward. It's the direction we need to go. We need to cooperate more, and we're looking forward to working with her and all of you on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to ask Mr. Warren.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Bonhoeff.
I just want to make a comment on the contract issue, because I certainly am not advocating that school districts break their contracts, and I don't think that we could do that. So that's something, again, that a consultant would work closely with a school district to see where renegotiating made sense and where it didn't, and that would have to be put into the bill as well.
Okay. And then after Mr. Warren, I'd like to ask the Minnesota School Boards Association. I believe they're here. So, okay. Mr. Warren.
Mr. Chairman, members, Lee Warren, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I'm here to address the shared services portion of this particular bill from MREA's perspective. MREA has always put learners first. Everything that we react to is about what's best for kids. And particularly, we want to keep any cuts out of the classroom so that we save that for learning possibly for teachers and kids. Shared services over the years have proven to be a real effective way to save money and provide services where they might not be available otherwise, and combining back office functions. It's a management tool that can be used to supplant a program or add value by providing savings that then can be used in the classroom. MREA has always supported financial incentives that help drive shared services either through state aid or local levy options. Outside of representing MREA the last couple of years, I have 35 years of experience in public education and have had a lot of firsthand experiences with shared services, including I combined two school districts' offices into one twice. I combined four district offices into one. I ran a regional ESV management information center and did accounting, payroll, and student services for 65 districts. I ran a service cooperative that provided cooperative purchasing that included things like school supplies, equipment, furniture, computers, technology, equipment, food, things like that. We provided shared services for our members, such as a wide area network, support staff to run that network, courses to run over that, curriculum directors, business managers, principals, superintendents, as well as running four area learning centers for multiple district health and safety services, specialists in special education and human resources. So I believe that shared services work. I believe that it can save money outside of the classroom, and it can provide expertise where it is needed or where it may not be available. So we're very supportive of this concept and want to thank Senator Bonhoeff and members for bringing this to the table. I also know that the vast majority of school districts are already today doing many of these shared services in one fashion or another. Because shared services can mean many different things to different people, I think we really need to have an exact definition of what shared services mean in the context of this bill. Regarding this bill, MREA would like to see the following: a clear definition of the services that are being offered, voluntary rather than mandatory participation, a better and clear understanding of what a consultant might be expected to do, a different source of revenue to pay for the consultant and not deduct money from the general education aid, and an opportunity for local vendors to participate. We believe there may be some unintended consequences to this portion of the bill, and would urge that you consider retooling this shared services proposal that's currently in front of the committee, and we stand ready to work with you on that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your points. They're right, very, very specific, so thank you. I actually had misspoken, and there's one other person that I'd like to have come up, and it's Ms. Smith. Is it Stacia Smith? And then we'll have the School Boards Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members and Senator Bonhoeff for taking the time to listen to me real quick. I'm Stacia Smith with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I just wanted to inform you that we are supportive of this concept to allow school districts to share services. In fact, it's in our policy and has been for a number of years. And we take our policy around the state and share it with a whole host of communities, 34 communities each year. And we have 270 local chambers that also see our policies. And I just wanted to let you know that we haven't had any negative feedback from small businesses around the state to this yet about this. So I think there's been some people asking me if there would be any. So to this point, we haven't had any negative feedback yet, so I'll let you know if we hear anything. But at this point, we are supportive of this concept, and we look forward to working with Senator Bonhoeff on this bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Roveland?
I know that there hasn't been much time for the local businesses to react. This was just brought to their attention yesterday. But I am really curious about what large contracts could do to the small vendors and the small businesses on our main streets. I often think that, like in my community of Jordan, if you need a plumber or a roofer or somebody even just to do repair jobs, and I don't know if things like that will be required to have a state vendor or not, but that our local businessmen are always very available. They're always very cooperative, and in fact, they're very supportive of the school district and may even give a better price to the local school district because it is their local school district. And I'm thinking if the district has to call in someone who's on the vendor list and a lot of the local businesses are excluded, I don't know that the local businesses would respond very well to that. And I'm just wondering about your response to that.
You did say that if you got some negative feedback, you'd share that with us, right?
Yes, I'll definitely let you know. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Roebling, yes, like I said, this bill hasn't gotten very far yet. So I'm sure as people hear this, they'll let me know if there are some major concerns that we haven't heard anything yet. I definitely share the same concerns as you've just mentioned. And I hope that working with Senator Bonhoeff, we can try to alleviate as many of those concerns as possible for the specific situations like you just mentioned.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, I too share those concerns. And the last thing that we want this legislation to do is to undermine the relationship between the person on, you know, down the street from the school providing that service. And sure, so we will make sure that this bill does not do that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next, the Minnesota School Boards Association. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher. It's changed. I got married during the summer. Now I'm a mother of seven, so it's nice to share. The name changed with you today. We're here to express some of our concerns and really our thoughts about study for this bill. We got a copy of it yesterday and spent a portion of yesterday just going through the words that are in the draft bill language, and we have some big concerns, and Scott was good enough to share with you all our different choices presently in the market for cooperation and collaboration. I would also suggest to you that we come under the competitive bidding law for local governments. So a lot of those contracts are done under the public scrutiny that are transparent and that we are receiving the best price we can, at least in our local area, going forward. We are specifically concerned about the provision that deals with food service and transportation services. As it is written, we would be required to take a vendor off the state-approved list, and that means, at least as we read the bill as it's written, that those employees would be let go on a local level, and we have to choose from the vendor list. I suggest to you that bus transportation in Minnesota of our public schools very different and often based on geography more than cost, and costs vary tremendously. We have Brooklyn Center, which is a small district with about 13 miles. We have some northern districts that transport their children over a million miles. So certainly a vast difference in how we transport and those costs across the state. We have half the buses in the state are owned by local school districts. Contractors. And in order to achieve the cost and efficiency savings, there has to be some. Not everyone can be on the list. And I would think some of those local businesses or the local contractors and local school districts would not be able to use what they presently even have. And once again, have to go back to that list. The food service component, those are our lunch ladies. Those have come out of school district kitchens that we have and are served throughout our cafeterias. A lot of times those school kitchens are the biggest kitchen in the community. And it's not clear how a statewide provider would do that. Would they come to the school district and negotiate? Would the vendor come to us to negotiate for the kitchen and some kind of payment So we're going around two or three times. So we really want to spend some time looking at those provisions. And certainly we want the ability to be able to call Joe the plumber on Main Street and ask him to come fix the school toilet.
I think Joe the plumber is over in Israel right now.
Let's just say, Mr. Chairman, Eric the electrician then. The come fix the lights in the schools. And there really is no emergency provision. If a boiler would break, what at this point would we do if the vendor, the state approved, four vendors couldn't get to Black Duck until, 3 weeks from now? And we really need to think about providing, our goal is to provide quality education for Minnesota school children. And we need to make sure that this does not hamper and repair. And we are always committed to looking for cost and efficiency savings. But to mandate us to only use these pieces seems somewhat short-sighted. I know Mr. Deans has a few comments he'd like to share also.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. One of the problems, that we have, when you get a bill that's been around for about 2 days, is you can only speak to the words that are here. And obviously we're willing to work with Senator Bonnop. We didn't have the opportunity to have some of those discussions beforehand. But we know that we've got lots of joint purchasing options that are out there. Everything is not covered by those joint purchasing options. However, some of those providers, like later on in the bill, provides that the service co-ops are all authorized vendors. Well, all the service co-ops don't necessarily provide transportation. And if we listen to Mr. Dahl, we're talking about one or two transportation contracts that would cover the whole state. And that means that all your local contractors are gone. That means that your local drivers that belong to the school district would be gone. Now, that may or may not be a good thing. It may save money. It may be a good deal to dump all the food service people and to have a statewide contract that covers that, because, for one thing, those statewide vendors don't have to provide health service. They don't have to provide pensions. So they can do this stuff cheaper because they can offer this stuff out at minimum wage. And when you get to the calculation, I spoke quickly to Mr. Nauman about this. I don't really understand how you would do that savings calculation when the contract would be a statewide contract, but then you're going to go back and try to figure out how it works in each individual district. It may be more expensive. It may be less expensive. We've had lots of districts that were going to contract out their food service and decided not to do it because they were able to work something out at the local level that it would be cheaper. Now, here they wouldn't have that option because they would be required to contract it, because that's what the language says. I don't think that's what you mean, but you're going to probably have to go home and explain to all those lunchroom ladies that their jobs are gone at the end of the year if this happens. I don't think that's what you necessarily want to do. If you want to make it so that it's easier for us to contract and to privatize these services, there's other ways to deal with that. But that's what this does. The other a couple of other issues that just came up quickly. When you look under the goods and services, if you look under that number one where it talks about all school materials and supplies and stuff, well, we heard testimony that doesn't apply to textbooks, but I don't know whether that applies to textbooks. What's materials? I understand these are words things. You really can't tell. On the food services and the transportation, it seems to me we're not talking about the food. We're talking about the food service. You're not talking about the gasoline. You're talking about driving the buses and that. To go back to Senator Hahn's position, who do you call when the issue – we know who you call now. You call the school board, somebody on the school board, and raise a lot of hell if my kid hasn't been picked up for 3 days. Well, who do you call here? So we call the department, and they say, yeah, we're going to do an investigation. We'll get out there within a couple of weeks. They don't. The department, quite honestly, and Department of Administration, too, they don't have people to send out to do this investigation. They may have a human rights investigator or something, but they don't have somebody to figure out why your kid's not getting picked up. I mean, these are just problems kind of with the way that the bill is drafted. There isn't an exception if these services are cheaper at the local level. And if we have every vendor that presently provides the services is on the list, then in theory there is no savings. So if you have the local guy, I don't know what happens if that boiler isn't working and we don't have somebody that we can call. We can call this heating vendor from the Twin Cities that got the statewide contract, but I don't know how long it takes that vendor to get to Thief River Falls or to Black Duck. And in the meantime, that temperature's dropping in that building. And also, you know, it appears to apply to every from dollar one. You know, right now we only competitive bidding applies to contracts for over $100,000, but this appears to apply to every contract. If you needed to go down and buy food for the home ec thing for tomorrow, I think you'd have to go through this state contract, even if you were buying $20 worth of food. Some of these are issues that we can work out, I think. But other ones, if you're going to do it that way, are going to create a bigger problem. One of the things maybe that you need to do is put a provision in to publicize some of the state contracts. We can already get on all these state contracts. School district has to pay, I think it's $400, and you can take advantage of any state contract that's out there. So if they're contracting for photocopiers or any of this kind of stuff, they got millions of those, and you can opt right into that. You could also change that and require the state to allow us to get in for free. But you also have to remember that when we use the word vendor here, when you have a joint purchasing co-op, they're not the vendor. The vendor is who they buy it from. So the vendor would be maybe Walmart. And Walmart, you know, I would think would be able to come in here and drive a lot of people out by doing some big numbers here. But they're the vendor, not the intermediate district or not the co-op. It's who sells the actual widget that you're buying. So you know, we're certainly willing to work on this, and we want to. To save money too, we understand that, and I think that the concept that you know it's gonna we know it's gonna be tough times this year. I mean we read the paper too, but you know terminating all those jobs and that automatically doesn't make a lot of sense to us.
Okay, just kind of summarizing. Certainly we need more clarification. I think that was pretty clear from your testimony. Senator Bonha?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you know, I appreciate this process and think it's critical to have people give their input, but I also want to make sure that I have the opportunity to set the record straight, because some of the expressions that were used are the kind of expressions that if people go out of here and everybody says, well, did you hear? We're privatizing all the services. So I want to just make sure we're setting the record straight that while that was said at the table, that isn't, in fact, the intent of the legislation. We're not talking about getting rid of lunch ladies. We're not talking about privatization of anything. And I understand that in reading the language, that isn't clear, and so we have a job before us, and we'll tackle that job. But let us not go out of this room today and have those kinds of conversations, because I think that will keep us from being able to do the real work of reform. Thank you.
Good point.
Who's left?
Minnesota.
I can't see the clock.
Senator Gerlach,
did you have a question?
A brief question.
if I could, to Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff and Mrs. Kelleher, mother of seven. It's oftentimes easier to influence legislation in its draft stages before a bill is introduced, and it sounds like you've got a lot of concerns, and it sounds like you're more on defense right now. Has there been prior, I mean, in putting the bill together, it sounds like you've done a lot of work with other groups and such. Have you had communications and consultations and discussions with the School Board Association? They're a major player in this. Have you had discussions with them prior to introducing the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gerlach, we have not talked. I have talked to many different groups, but it was always the intent that we would put forward an early reform bill and then begin to work on it. And so this is in draft form, and I will make sure to be working with them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Deans and Mr. Keller. Next we have Education Minnesota, Mr. Dewar.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tom Dewar, president of Education Minnesota, and it's interesting to be back in front of you talking about reform, and you're going to hear a lot of ideas this session that haven't been completely thought out, that are geared towards savings money, and we need to take a careful look at each one of them, but we need to make sure that they actually save money and they don't harm our kids in the schools. To put this proposal in perspective, the services that are addressed in this bill cover approximately 17% of our school district budgets, and you're going to save about 5%. So if you do the quick math, you're less than 1%. Is that worth looking at? Absolutely. But we need to make sure that there's actual savings that are actually going to go back into the classroom and how we calculate that. And I think what you're going to see is several groups here today that are having several concerns about that same issue. A big point, though, is that this is a distraction from the real problem of school funding. Even Representative Winkler said yesterday in the press conference that school funding has far lagged behind the needs of our schools. And in fact, over the last several years, Education Minnesota has put forward a bill that addresses the main cost driver of school districts, which is health care, mandatory pooling. Interesting concept, something that we've been looking at. And the governor has had it on his desk 2 years in a row, and he's vetoed that. We can't take issues that are nibbling around the edges to make sure that we're saving money. We need to keep our attention on the big picture, which is funding that's equitable for all our schools, that's sustainable for all of our school districts, that's predictable for our school boards, and that is sufficient for our kids so they can get a great 21st century education. We also have some concerns about what would the actual savings be, that the services are not just the cheapest and that our students would be harmed, that the guarantee that the money would actually flow back to the classroom, who's going to be accountable for this, what are the assurances this plan would not lead to job losses that would further damage our state's economy, how would the vendors be chosen, what's the criteria for getting on the approved list, and what's the consultant's role and how will they be chosen. But also, what is also not being talked about today, are there pieces in this bill that talk about education? Talk about phonics, talk about teacher training and teacher testing that need to be flushed out. And those are some concerns that we have today, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Michelle Swiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll keep my comments brief, but I can tell that the 2009 legislative session is going to be a great one. Already, we have started out on a bipartisan fashion in that MSBA was actually talking about protecting insurance, pensions, and not having too many layoffs, and we really appreciate that, and are looking forward to it. I'm just going to talk briefly about the irony of what some of this bill does, and that is that when we're trying to find money for education and improve the funding for education, while the intent of this bill is to save money, in savings you are often talking about cuts. Now, the consultants that would be hired would actually make more money if a district saves more, and those savings often result in cuts. And so if a consultant suggests and the district adopts, and I'm not exactly sure how all that would work, a significant cut, which could mean a loss of jobs, a loss of, you know, spending in the local community, et cetera, it will mean that the consultant is paid more. I think it makes more sense to continue to work with Senator Bonhoff about how we can spend efficiently in the education system and then recoup those monies within the system and not pay expensive consultants for that service. The state could do some of this work. They could provide opportunities, whether it's voluntary or mandatory. We're not getting into that debate today, as we're saying education funding is the most important. But there might be other ways to work with Senator Bonhoff to try to do something other than paying expensive consultants.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. And, Brad Lundell. Questions? Is Brad there? Mr. Lundell.
Sorry, I had to step out there for a minute, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity and Education, also do legislative work for the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. I want to really thank Senator Bonhoff for coming forward with this bill, and I think it's, as per usual around here, I try to lend a historical perspective. This is something very reasonable, and it needs to be discussed again. We take a look at the history of Minnesota. We've been doing cooperative purchasing for about 40 years. I think go back to the creation of the RDCs and the XUs coming out of the RDCs back in the early 1970s. And we were seeing back then the need for cooperative purchasing and greater cooperation across school districts. My frustration, and this again comes from my involvement with a lot of these kind of entities, is that the administrations of, you know, going back and legislators going back another, legislatures going back another 30 years have really given an inconsistent message as to what the expectations for cooperation are and what the path to those expectations will be. We've had the XUs, the intermediate districts, the education districts, the computing consortiums, VOTEC co-ops, joint powers agreements, the wide area transportation network. And those things have all been out there, but and hailed as great education moving forward with education. They've done marvelous things, but then the legislature turned around, I think starting in the late 1980s and through the 1990s, and dismantled largely by policies not directly speaking toward those entities and basically eroded much of the cooperation that was going on. And I think that what I would hope that would come out of this would be clear legislative expectations and administrative support and then paths to doing those things. And I think that that's really the number one thing that can come out of here. I talked with Commissioner Segrin yesterday and basically said that to her, that what we really need here is clarity of mission, and then guidance to what that mission will be. A clear and consistent message that would come out and that, again, paths to, you know, likely savings. But we can't just stop at the administrative end here. We really do have to talk about the service delivery. I did work with the education districts and the vocational co-ops. Those folks have been just absolutely hammered. And one of the reasons they were hammered was decisions to send money directly to school districts as opposed to supporting the intermediate co-ops. And also the cut of non-regular transportation, which provided transportation revenue to get children from the school to the vocational or co-op or the intermediate co-op or whatever it might be. And I think we have to really talk about kind of the whole system and where cooperation fits within that system and then, you know, move in those directions. I think Senator Hand's point is extremely valid about we have a unitary system now where governance, service delivery, and administration all fall under basically one roof, or 340 plus 150 charter school roofs. And we have to really look at, is that the way we want to do things, and how does that fit within that? I also, in my work with transportation, I would say that if the Department of Education or the Department of Administration is probably going to have to hire about 300 switchboard operators to take the calls every morning when someone's not picked up or why the bus is running late or things like that. So I think that That's a very good point that that Mr. Dean's brought up, is that how does this work? I mean, in terms of transportation. Transportation is the ultimate can of worms. And I think, again, we see where the legislation, where actions the legislature's taken over the past couple of decades in terms of charter school, area learning centers, other ventures. We see more and more children in day treatment, those types of things. Oftentimes, there's an urgency and a variegated need, and how do you meet that need on a really relatively short time frame? In those are, again, questions. Is the vendor list going to be able to accommodate that? And how do we meet those needs? I would suggest, and Jan Vanderwall, the transportation director at Roseville today, told me about a program that they have in North Carolina where they have the state provides a computer routing system for all school districts. All school districts can have access to this computer routing system, in which they can then go in and see how efficient their routes are compared to what's the optimum routing in their school district given the kind of routes that they have. Those are the kinds of things where, again, state support and giving access to that, I think, is something that we can look at. With that, I'll just conclude my comments. Again, thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Thank you, committee. And let's, like Ms. Allswager said, it's just going to be a great year. Let's
Well, I do want to thank you, because sometimes those historical perspectives are very helpful and can help us put things into, kind of get a little more of a grasp of it. And, I think this whole, as Senator Bonhoff mentioned when she started, this whole thing isn't arising out of anything but necessity, in a sense. I mean, we are looking at ways to preserve the money we have in our education system and actually make it more efficient. And I think also you mentioned, that, Senator Bonhoff, that you're more than willing and open and want to invite comments and suggestions and sit down and talk to whoever is interested. So.
Yes, thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lundell, having been, you may have been around here longer than I have in terms of historical memory, but I appreciate your comments. And as I've reflected on many of the things that have been said by each of the testifiers, I think it would be helpful, before we have our next discussion of this area, is to get, if to the extent that it's possible, to have some kind of an inventory of these various kind of cooperative arrangements, not only just the entities, but some of the things were thrown out there that I didn't know about. Ways that people have connected, and all of a sudden somebody's got 80 school districts working with them on a given area. Yeah, I think the other thing it points out, and you have, is that the individual things that we've named in here, sometimes each of those have unique aspects to them that need to be dealt with in a different way, and it's hard to have one structure that covers all of this. And so what I would hope that could come out of this is that not only a recognition of what good things we've got going in cooperation and shared services now, but then how can we enhance that? In other words, are there barriers that we have to access to the current arrangements, or is there a need for some kind of new arrangement that would enhance that cooperation and draw more, either more of the functions or more of the districts or both into this whole area? So, I think we all recognize we've got some work to do with this, that this isn't necessarily a specific model, but clearly we do need to continue to work toward more shared services and to do it in a way that's going to do no harm to our overall enterprise and to the things that each of our districts value. So, and I know that's what your intent is, Terry, and I've Senator Bonhoff, and I'm co-authoring with you, yes. And so I'll walk this road with you and help you to a great extent that I can.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. If I
Senator
could,
or Mr. Lundell,
just to add one little vignette here is that I think back to computing consortiums that were created in the late 1970s, and largely they were created to deal with the problem of UFARs. And you think back, I mean, we all, personal computers and PDAs and all those kinds of things are just standard today. Everybody's got one and everybody knows how to use them. But back in 1970, I think the average school employee basically with a computer was, they saw one on in a James Bond movie and they basically knew how to plug them in. But that was basically the extent of computer knowledge. Those computer consortiums built huge mainframes with high overheads, and then in the late 1980s, when the personal computer and smaller computers became more applicable or more usable, more user-friendly, we saw these computing consortiums with large costs, and then districts were kind of chafing, saying, well, these people can do so little with these mainframe computers, and we're paying so much for them, we want to go to smaller computers that are going to be more we're able to do payroll and all these things on site, and we're also be able to, you know, work them into our instructional programs. And so I think I'm not picking on any one side or the other here, but I think we always have to think as we move in the shared services range that we have to continually look forward as to what the needs are going to be, not what they are today, but what they may be 10 years from now. And again, that's with vendors and the whole thing. This has to be a dynamic process. Because, as we know, technology continues to increase in an accelerating pace. We just have to be, you know, forward-thinking as we embark on this.
Right. Thank you very much. And I want to thank everyone who presented. Members, before we adjourn, we have session next week, Tuesday, we will have staff give a presentation on the education finance aspects, and I believe that's going to take 2 days, so Tuesday and Thursday.
Mr. Chairman, it depends on questions.
On questions.
Question, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bono.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were two pieces of this bill that we didn't get to, and I did actually have testifiers who were ready to talk about them. Would we just like to get put out a schedule, you know, in the coming week to address when we'll finish that bill?
What I'd like to do is have anyone who has an interest to maybe work with you on the language or issues.
Okay.
Next issue, there's probably a couple things, but one of the things that's coming up, I'm not sure if it'll be next week or the week after, is that I'd like to have the committee discuss or get into a discussion on how we might be able to capitalize on any stimulus package that the federal level might pass, and at least get that discussion started, because I don't think there's anyone that's really kind of gathering together how the education institution in our state could capitalize on those federal dollars, whether it's green legislation, conservation, wind energy, facilities, technology. All of those things, I think, are still on the discussion stages at the federal level. So we'd like to bring in some resources to talk about. They probably aren't going to lay out the direct legislation, because I'm not sure anyone has it, but at least give us some insight into how our schools across the state can participate and what would be the best way to approach that.
Mr. Chair, have you set a date for when you might do that?
No, we're trying to round up resource people right now, and we're not sure exactly of the date. But I it's not going to – the purpose of it would be to get people thinking and giving us ideas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my superintendent has already brought it up and is already thinking about those kinds of things. I think there would be interest in the more that could be available to them and how we might access – either letting them know to come, or whether it's going to be televised so they can tune in, or whatever, to get that information. I think they would be ready to make some you know, proposals, or at least see how they might be able to take advantage of it.
Right. Okay. Committee is adjourned.
Very good. See you at the next meeting. You guys ask great questions.
Well, I can bend it. So I'm going to